When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Welcome to the New Books in Art, a channel of the New Books Network. My name is Yakir Englander, your host today. And today I'm going to speak with Nana Ariel and Uri Yoeli, writers and the owners of the Home Press. Home Press is a tiny local publishing house and press in Tel Aviv, Jaffa. Uri Yoeli and Nana Ariel, a couple, established it in their apartment in 2019. The Home Press booklets are thin, hand-sewn with needle and thread, printed in small numbered editions, and as opposed to bibliophilic books, cheaply produced and sold. They vary from prose to poetry, to history and artistic books. Home Press is an independent venture, inspired by the history of self-publishing, but not nostalgic. It is local, ecological home for books, largely detached from the book market, fueled by love for words, books, and people. Nana Ariel is a writer, a researcher, and a teacher. She teaches rhetoric at Tel Aviv University, formerly a visiting scholar at Harvard University. She published articles in international magazines, and is the author of books in Hebrew, including Manifestos, Restless Writing on the Brink of the 21st Century, and the children book, the most boring book in the world. Uri Yoeli is a writer, independent historian, and a high school teacher. He is the author of several books in Hebrew, including We Need to Talk About the Rabbi, a story of the little streets between Jaffa and Tel Aviv, and The Voice of Thunder, Notes and Stories in First Person. This episode, as few others, are part of a project I want to offer to you as the listeners about bringing the voices of Israelis and Palestinians. In the last years, I feel that the academic discourse about Israel and Palestine mostly speak about the people, about the situation, and much less listen to the voices from Palestine and from Israel. In this episode, as in some others I am producing and offering, I want to bring you the voices of the people from Israel and from Palestine. May this episode will be a light for peace.
Nana and Uri, you're welcome to the New Books Network.
Thank you so much, Yakir, for inviting us.
Thank you for having us, Yakir.
It's such a pleasure. And what I would love to do, and I think it's going to be a little bit different interview than others, because we are not going to speak about a book. We're going to speak about a publishing house that is happening at your home. So can you share with us a little bit about how it come to life, this idea to have a publishing house at home? And what do you try to do?
Thank you for this question. I think it is quite unusual in a way to have a press at home. Perhaps the first thing to say is that it is a press and a publishing house. And these two functions are usually these days separated. You print books in one place and you publish them in another place or entity, which provides the editing services and distribution and other things. And we wanted to establish a press, which is also a publishing house. And it came to being, it was quite, I must say, spontaneous. We didn't think about it a lot when we started. It was a passion. I think that now that I reflect, I can say that we did ask ourselves, in a way, what an independent press is and what it can be. Because when we think today about independent presses, they can be very, very special, but they are quite similar to commercial presses in many ways. They print books in a certain technique. The process is in many ways similar. And what we do is we reduce in a way the process to the to the essentials in a way. We print the books in a very simple technique at home. We sew them. They're hand sewn, right? They're hand sewn, sewn by hand, in our apartment at Tel Aviv. We sell them in independent bookshops. There is no public relations in any way. We do everything ourselves, from editing to picking them, of course, to printing, and so on. So I think the choice to do it was quite spontaneous, but it did touch some essential questions in the publishing world today. And we also, I think, had some historical models in our mind when we did it, but perhaps Uri will sing some more.
When I think of myself as a writer, I think of writing as manufacturing work. I think of me when I write, I manufacture text, and in a way, manufacturing books or leaflets like we do is the normal process. Is for me, it's just one step ahead of this manufacturing job. In a way, what Nana talked about earlier, the separation between producing the book and writing it, and this separation between the book as a work of the mind and the book as an artifact, the separation is a bit
artificial.
It's artificial. Yeah, it's an entity in my opinion, and it's a very, and in what we do, it's a very simple entity. We take the text that usually we or the people we love or people or texts we choose manufacture, and we manufacture them in an object, which is our work. And I've been making books. I had a few books which I made by hand already 15 or 20 years ago. I did some editions of 150 copies of books I made by hand, and it always seemed to me like the most normal thing to do. In a way, home press is the child of those thought, and also, like Nana said before, it goes in the path that was made by that was already drawn before.
Yes, I think that for me, 20 years ago, when we're talking, I wasn't in the picture yet, what I had in mind, among other things, is my experience with the Hogarth Press that Virginia and Leonard Wolf were a couple established in their home back in 1917. And when I was at Harvard doing my postdoc there, I realized that this is the centenary of the press. So I wanted to curate an exhibition of the original books of Virginia and Leonard Woolf, which were there because Harvard has everything. Mm-hmm. And I dared to suggest that I'll curate with a colleague of mine from Turkey an exhibition. And I saw these books, which are so simple and also sewn by hand. Virginia Woolf set the type of each letter separately when she manufactured herself, by herself, her first books at home on the kitchen table. So for me, this was very inspiring. The very idea that someone can just say, I'm doing it. You know, I decide that I make books and here we go. I make books. And so when we came back, we just said, let's start this. And I think that the reactions were for us completely unexpected because.
Can you share with us a little bit? How people react when they see it on in the store, or when they buy it after that, what do they tell you?
I think that for us it's related to the distance between our expectations and what actually happened, because we didn't expect anything. We just started to make books, and suddenly people gave us such warm and enthusiastic reactions, and we felt in those reactions, because perhaps we should say that we manufacture very, very small editions. It's a few, I think perhaps the biggest edition was something like, after two prints, two editions, 200 books for an edition, and it's not a lot. Right. By the way, it's not
very small number. I mean, to create 200 books, it takes a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. And by the way, the average amount of books sold in Israel, Palestine, today is something like 200, 300, the average of a regular book in a regular publishing house. So it's not very far from what happening in the market. But we feel, I think, that there is this cultural wave worldwide attracted again to labor and to the labor of literature in a way, and not only in the field of literature, also in other fields, the desire to make things manually, to work and to reduce the distance between your work and the product. I think that every writer, I also published some books in commercial publishing houses. And I think that every writer who wrote a book knows this experience of just, you write something and a lot of time passes, and then you receive this box of books and you don't know where did it come from. It's coming from
so true.
Some place, and you don't know who actually made it. And you feel, I think you're probably excited because it's your book, but you also feel alienated in a way because it's detached from your being. And I think that the desire here is to make books that are related to the experience of life, more connected to life.
I think that also, in a way, home press fills a void. The Israeli publishing world, I think, many other small countries, publishing worlds, is broken.
In which way?
Traditional publishing homes no longer finance publishing of books. In many times, what they ask is for people, for writers, to finance their own books, or to find finance, to get finance. And the printing is mostly done in big presses, in big commercial presses, very low quality printing of books that won't last, that are bound in with glue and made from cheap materials. Books, the cost of a single book is minimal. But the cost of publishing a book, because it has to finance all the broken mechanism that still goes on, is enormous. They charge a writer $20,000 or $30,000, like something like $10,000 for publishing a book for 1,000 copies, which are almost never sold. And are just stored in warehouses. But this is the way things are done. So everything is still like the conclusion of all those years of manufacturing got us to the same place that books are objects of cheap objects which reflect the brands that made them. And I think, in my opinion, this is wrong. This is wrong, and also not. It can't last. It won't last. It doesn't hold water. It can't stay like this. Now the movements Nana talked about earlier, the maker movements are sort of reactions to the same things that happened in the consumer world. And I think that in a way, our small press, which already has some copycats. Some people are using our methods now, which is excellent. And I think we had someone come over and we taught her our techniques. We told her exactly how to do exactly what we do. And now she has a small press at home, which prints plays and sends them by mail. Wow. To people. And I think it's because it fills a void. And I also think that this void only grows, and that small scale printing and manufacturing and hand and manual work will have a bigger place in the future than it has now.
Fascinating. So if I'm a writer and we decide that you're publishing a book that I wrote, will I have also, or the writers who are coming to you, are they part of the process of deciding how the cover looks like? Because each cover look totally different, and some of them in different material, the pages are different. The amount of artistic things that are happening inside books, like I in love with this book of Shibuya and Shikuya flying to the desert, which is a story about two fairies. And you know what? Can I describe what I see when I got it? First of all, just to give it to sit on your table, it's like almost going to, you know, touching a prayer book that you do not like put your coffee next to, but you give it time, you look at that, and then you open, and there is a very gentle play between, I mean, the letters, just the letters of the book are incredible. Of course, the drawings and it's like a story for kids, but maybe also for adults. And then when you finish the book, you end the book about what happened to these two fairies when they travel to the desert, which is so much about the place where you are living, right? I mean, desert of Israel. Then there is another book inside, because it's actually the book become a cover of a letter. And inside you have a guide for fairies, how to meet with desert creatures. This is something that I will never put or give back is going to stay with me. It will have an honorable place in my home. There is also the number. I have number 57 of 100. It's art. It's art. I show it to every person who is coming to my home. So it's one example. Please tell us about that.
About Shibuya and Shikuya, first I must say that this is Sharon Kanto, who is a very talented writer and activist. And
I think she had this story, and she didn't think the story fits with traditional publishing houses. She didn't want it done in traditional publication. She felt it's kind of something which is off her path, and she's a friend of ours, like everyone that we print, and she came to us with the story and with the drawings,
yes.
with some of the yeah. drawings,
and Shachar also, right? He did
and we thought about it together. We thought about it together. This idea of making the pocket in the cover, and how to make the cover, and how to find the material for the cover, and how to fold this leaflet that's in the end, and what to do, and it was a lot of mutual thinking, and a lot of small solutions. It's like I think we both like challenges. I like the technical challenge of doing things in a simple way, but still to make them look and feel like they will last. Doing beautiful things. And in the end, it was sort of
for me, for example, the challenge is always finding, for example, the font for the books, which is for me like a riddle that I must solve, and I know that there is a solution, and I have no qualification as a designer or something like that, but I do. And we're quite, we let ourselves making books without the suitable qualification, and
using the simplest tools.
Yes.
The simplest tools. Not because of some special quality, but because those are the tools that we have, like word processors. I don't know. It's
done in the simplest way, but I think that it lets us in a kind of freedom that I think people who are designers or graphic designers or professional printers can't perhaps deal with, because something like this little book by Sharon Kanto and Shachar Sarig in a commercial press would have cost a lot to make, doing this pocket and making and printing it in
I mean, I've never seen something like that. So
yeah, it's possible, but it will cost a lot. And because we are doing it in a very simple way at home, it can be simple, but yet inspirational. I think in the way it's done. Also, we have another book which is tiny, a really really tiny book called Epigraph, and it's a book of epigraphs. The whole book is sentences we took from epigraphs of other books published that year, and so we can do all kinds of things without the regular limitations that other presses have.
We also have room for variations, for example, when we make the covers, we use stamps. We use stamps in order to make to print on the covers.
Yes.
In a way, no cover looks the same. One of the books I published was about a running diary. The cover was a print of a running shoe, of my running shoe, which I printed on each of the covers.
I think symbolically, it's like your footprint. Your footprint on the cover. Literally, it's, you know.
Oh, one of the books that I saw that you have. We did a reprint of a journey by a mythologic lifeguard.
Batiam, right?
Yeah,
from the city of Batiam. Yeah.
There we could tear the cover up by hand and make sort of impression of a seashore, because a torn page looks a little bit like the sea.
When Uri told me that was his idea, and when Uri told me that he's gonna tear up the book, I thought that this was a very bad idea. I was thought that books can't be torn, but he tried it and it worked. So we have this room for experiments that are unbearable. In this case, really, you don't tear books. It's not done.
You don't tear books, and you always suppose to manufacture. The whole idea of an assembly line is that every artifact that comes out of the assembly line should be the same, but we can't
physically it's not possible.
Every object is different. I think this is also one of the reasons we number our books, because you have number 57.
Yes.
It's not the same as number 56 or as number 58. It's not the same. It's not the same book. It's not the same book. I think that by using this assemblage of very simple machines and very simple techniques, but getting some we know how to control those techniques and those machines. It gives us almost absolute freedom. We can do things that can't be done any other ways, and we can do it in our back room.
Is it something that every listener who is now listening to us potentially can do? Is it something that you needed to learn for years? Or it's seriously possible to create books and to bring your artistic view in every house of now of our listener who are listening in India or in Australia or in little village in France? What do you tell them to these people who want to learn, like, oh my God, it sounds my dream, but what I'm going to do next?
So simple. I think that what was so surprising for us is to find out that there are not thousands of places like ours. It's so simple. This technology of home printing, of duplex printing, is so cheap right now. It's so cheap right now, cheap and available to everyone. Book binding by hand is not a lost art. It's still being practiced, and we managed to learn it in one
session. And I think that all you need is a printer, even the simplest printer, something to bind the book with. It can be anything. You can build yourself
a press by using wood clamps or things like this. It's so easy. It's so easy. You need a knife to cut the pages. But the tools of the profession, in order to start a home press, you don't need more than, I don't know, $200?
Less, I would say.
Incredible. By the way, Nana and Uri, I can see as a result of this podcast that a few online workshops with people or listeners from New Books Networks are going to, we're going to come to you. Please do it for us. So I invite the listeners to write. I mean, we're welcome to ask you. Maximum, you can, yes, welcome. Great. Last book, Nana, I'm holding your book. The Order of Things, we need to translate it to English. So The Order of Things, tell us a little bit about this. It look, oh my God, compared to the other ones, you really went minimalistic. And I want to share one more thing. When I contact you, The Order of Things made me to understand something very deeply about myself, which is, I'm writing articles, I'm writing academic books, and there's something in me always struggle to write it by computer, because there is something in the computer that it's walking too fast for me. I'm not breathing right when I write. And I had to always desire, what if I would, you know, go back to the 50s and 60s to write on a machine writing, I don't know how to say that in English. And then I saw, and I had this jealousy, but I couldn't do nothing about that. And then I saw The Order of Things, and the letters that you choose is exactly of this machine, at least in my opinion. So I wrote you and you gave me a gift, because now I wrote an article that's going to be published, and I wrote it in the right rhythm because of the letters that appear in my computer. And it's incredible. I think it's one of my best articles. Not that I want to be, you know, very narcissistic, but it's because I could breathe with the writing. So please tell us about that. And I know that we are speaking about your publishing houses, but I love your book and I love your guide about how to write CV. Which is, it holds so many beautiful things. So please, Nana, lead us into your book.
Wow, thank you for all these questions. I'm curious to read your article now. And I must say that one of the fields that I'm very interested in lately is the field called embodied cognition. And it the basic idea is that our perception is deeply rooted in our body and in our sensory motor perception. So there is no separation between body, the way we write, the way we choose to write, for example, as you said, and what we write and the way we can perceive ideas. So it's not surprising at all to me that you think, and I think you're right, and researchers in cognitive psychology support your thesis that you write differently when you write in a different way. It's almost intuitive, right? So for me, the whole thing about the press, and it related also to the Order of Things, is that a book can have only one form, the form of this specific book. Me finding the right form for a book is part of the book, is not a decoration or like writing it and then finding the binding or something like that. For me, the content and form is a completely artificial separation. And so in The Order of Things, I think that I kind of realized an old fantasy I have of writing about catalogs and all kinds of catalogization of the world something like that. And it's really hard to describe to people who don't see it now, but It's also a book about form, I think, about the form of things. It has one item about the color white and the spectrum of whites that you have when you want to color your house or something like that. And so it is very white, and it tries to kind of emphasize or demonstrate the spectrum of these whites in the, in language, but also in the form. So there are all kinds of, for me, it's supposed to be a very amusing book. I hope I succeeded. This was supposed to be funny, and to contemplate and try and experiment with all kinds of words and forms.
I think that Nana has the ability to be intellectual without being boring, which is a good ability, I think.
Very good one for all scholars.
I think that the deep thought that's embedded in this book is a pastime. It's a good pastime. It's a good way to it's a good, it's a good, it's thinking is amusing. It's a good form of amusement. And I think this book is very amusing and very full and very thoughtful.
Thank you.
I love that.
It's funny to talk about books that our listeners can't really reach, but it really is. It's so, as you said, I think it's not about the individual book, but about the act of making books. And as we said, the making itself is really the simplest you can imagine. And so the thing is, I think, is thinking about a book. What could be a book? I had this course in the university this semester called "What is a book?" Let's ask, what is a book? Instead of determining that we already know what is a book, let's ask, what is a book? And that's the question we ask every time from the beginning when we start a new book. We don't take for granted this entity called book, but open the question.
But also to the privilege to experience, like experience with printing on recycled paper, or choosing between recycled or unrecycled, or 50% recycled, 100% recycled, printing on transparent pages, printing the forces, the backside of the cover. It's experiencing. I don't know.
You also mentioned the ecological aspect, which is, I was so surprised that when I printed a regular book in a regular press, how much pollution is involved in the process of making a book, how much things are just thrown. And we really do try to
reduce it. First of all, by reducing, we don't have stock.
Yes.
We don't need to have stock. What we manufacture, we sell. We don't have a warehouse. But we also try to use recycled paper and to recycle our own paper, to use our leftovers to make presents.
Rosh Hashanah greetings are made from the leftovers of last year's books. By the way, there was not so many, only two, because I think, I must say that as we speak, this is the second birthday of Home Press. I think maybe even today.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah, because we started it in
Happy birthday.
I think this is
2 years ago. Yeah. The ecological aspect, I think, is really central. We try to be modest. Our aspirations are very modest in a way.
Yeah,
we're not trying to conquer anything. We're not trying to expand. No, we don't want to expand. This is what it is. People sometimes ask, so what would you do to where would you like to take it to?
This is this. I love it. And I want to end with saying something that I'm just thinking, because we do it in English, right? I mean, I think that there is something in your books that it's very much Tel Aviv. It's like it speaks the people who it speaks you. And also I think it speaks like something very Israeli. It's like something so much from, you know, from the place. It's part of the place. And I think that, you know, if we would find a way and you create a dialogue, and this is an invitation, right, to other people who are doing it in different places in the world, I think it's such a beautiful way how to speak between cultures. And so I'm inviting our listeners to go, and even that it's in Hebrew, to go to your website and to look at that, to be inspired, right? I mean, it's one of the gifts that you give me, and I'm sure you're going to give others. And I wish you all the best. And thank you so much for doing this incredible and beautiful gift to all of us. So thank you, Nana, and thank you, Uri.
Thank you, Yakir.
Thank you, Yakir, for your kind words, for this interview.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.